Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events related to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our program tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? I am your host, Doris Hansen. And as the title of our show suggests, we do talk about polygamy here. We talk about early Mormon leaders and their polygamy and their sermons and some of their hidden doctrines about polygamy. We talk about present-day Mormonism and what they have done with the subject of early Mormon polygamy. And we talk about present-day Mormon fundamentalists and their doctrines and their practice of polygamy today. The purpose of our program is to provoke those who watch, our viewers, whether you're Mormon or whether you're in a polygamy group or if you've left a polygamy group. We would like you to test everything that you see, everything that you hear, and everything that you feel. And the test for all of that, is, of course, is the Bible. We want to obey Jesus by uncovering the lies and proclaiming the truths of His Word. Jesus was dogmatic about salvation. There's only one way, and it isn't through polygamy, and it isn't through any doctrine of the early Mormon polygamous church either. We do not hate Mormons, and we do not hate polygamists, but we do hate all doctrines that claim to be true, but instead are false. Normally, we are broadcasting live from Salt Lake City, Utah, but tonight our program is pre-recorded, so there's no one in the studio to take your phone calls. Tonight's show is not a live broadcast, and we will not be taking telephone calls. However, if you have questions or comments that you would like to make regarding the subject matter of the show tonight, you are free, to, of course, and we welcome you to email us your comments or your concerns at the email address tv@aboutpolygamy.com. We will either email the answer back to you, or we will read your question or comment on a future show and answer your question on TV. And if you know of anybody who is outside of our viewing area and they are unable to receive the TV on their program on TV, you might tell them they can go to our website, whatloveisthis.tv, and watch all of our programs on streaming video at that location. We also have the DVD, Lifting the Veil of Polygamy, available to anyone who's in a polygamy group or who has left a group. Even if you're in the Mormon Church, we would be happy to send you this absolutely free. Just tell us how to get it to you, and we will send it to you free of charge. If you would rather watch it online, you can go to livinghopeutah.org and watch the entire DVD online. And for more information about how we can help you if you're in a polygamy group and you need help, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org. I left the polygamy group that I was born and raised in when I was 18 years old. I didn't have anyone to talk to. We were threatened that if we talked to anybody outside of a polygamy group, we were doomed to hell and damnation and eternal sons of perdition status. We couldn't talk to anybody inside the group about our doubts and our fears. We would have been told on. We would have been reported. And if I had talked to my parents, I would have been beaten up for my doubts and lectured incessantly. There was no one for me to talk to. We want to make a difference in your life. Do you have something that you want to talk about? Everything we do is absolutely confidential. We just want you to call. We have a toll-free number. It's 877-425-9993. If you want to talk, if you're in a situation where you're being forced into doing something you don't want to do, forced into a marriage, or if you just want to escape, give us a call, let us know, and we will help you. On our show on July 9th, we interviewed a woman by the name of Kay Brown. She had been born and raised in the Mormon polygamous system, or the Mormon religious system, excuse me, and she had a thought-provoking message that she wanted to give both to young women in a polygamy group or young women in the Mormon church. Her basic message was that she wished that when she had been a young woman growing up in the Mormon church, that she had had the information available that is so readily available today. She expressed how grateful she was for television shows like this one and other television shows that are now publicly testing and questioning the validity and the claims of the Mormon Church, of its founders, and of its doctrinal foundation. We are thankful for people like Kay Brown, who has the courage to come forward and talk about her experiences and to talk about her doubts, and which validate her story and testimonies, validate the things that we have been talking about, the truths of the scriptures and the truths of salvation in Jesus Christ alone. Tonight we have another guest that we're going to be interviewing, and she recently has left the Mormon church system as well. She left after discovering many historical events and spiritual truths that she discovered that her church had either systematically distorted or had completely hidden from her. Her testimony also includes some of the discoveries that she has made after watching this particular television show. Before I introduce our guest, I'd like to read portions of an email, the first email that she sent to us. And we've had a lot of email correspondence with this woman, and that's the basis of the show tonight, is to go through some of the points that she made in her emails. But this is her initial email. I'd like to share some of it with you. She said, "I stumbled across your program on the internet while recovering from a bad cold. I've spent the last week watching every episode available, some of them more than once. I would like to testify that as someone who has just left Mormonism after 18 years, every word you have spoken on your program thus far regarding the teachings and doctrines of the Mormon Church is true and fairly represented. I remember when I was 18 years old and was engaged to be married. My girlfriends and I were discussing how we'd have to get used to the idea of polygamy because that's what we were going to have to live in heaven. I was shocked as a convert, but so in love with my husband, I figured that I could come to terms with it over the years. None of us really understood it, but we knew one day we'd have to live it. In that respect, and in the sealing of multiple wives to husbands in the temple, polygamy is alive and well in the LDS Church. I was appalled at how ignorant I was. Until I read Rough Stone Rolling, I didn't know Joseph Smith was a polygamist. Talk about church teachings being whitewashed. I was a faithful, temple attending, every Sunday going, tithe paying, active LDS Church member. My husband had been a member for 30 years, taught seminary, and was in the bishopric four times. Yet he didn't know Joseph Smith practiced polygamy either. Talk about rock somebody's world. I've devoured church history since then. I can't believe how ignorant we were, how duped we feel. We were a golden family in the LDS Church, yet we knew so little about our own religion and history. I am ashamed and angered when I hear some young, usually male, LDS person phone into your show showing ignorance and haughtiness, this complete arrogance. I'm utterly ashamed for those callers, and I pray that one day they'll see the light and the truth. There's so much to say, so much to warn the potential converts and youth about, so much to recover from. The church says something like, they can leave the church, but they can't leave the church alone. Well, that's because it will take years for me to unravel what they have done. It'll take years for me to continue to wrap my brain around all I wasn't taught. It will take years for me to decompress. And now that I know the truth, how can I help but want to share it?" And so I asked this young woman if she would like to come on our show and share it. And I would like you to greet our guest tonight, Rebecca Whitaker from Kalama, mm-hmm. Washington. And welcome to our show, and what a touching email that is.
Thank you, Doris. I'm thrilled and humbled to be here. This has become my favorite TV program, and I've learned so much by watching your program. And you were reading my email, and I started getting teary-eyed because it just brings back all the feelings and all the emotions of first discovering the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's quite...
And the lies.
And the untruths, the mm-hmm. hidden things that
they have distorted.
Deception. And so you said that it'll take years for me to continue to wrap my brain around all I wasn't taught.
Which is embarrassing to admit that there is so much that you don't know when you go attend every week.
But you're not too embarrassed to talk about it and let others know.
It's too important to let my embarrassment get in the way of sharing information about the biblical Christ and
true teachings. Isn't that what you told us to do?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep, he did. Okay. So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to spend the time. You sent me an email mm-hmm. with a whole list of things you didn't know. And that's what mm-hmm. you entitled it, Things I Didn't Know.
Yes.
And so what I did is I took some from that list and we made the talking points for the show tonight from her list of things she didn't know. We are not going to have time to do an exhaustive discussion on everything she wrote. There were just too many. However, if there's anyone watching the show tonight who would like to launch your own study based on things that Becky didn't know, and maybe there are things you didn't know either, you can email us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and I'll be happy to email to you her list of things she didn't know in a PDF file, and then you can get started on your own study, and we hope that you do. So let's get started on your list. What is the first of the things that you didn't know?
Well, the first of many is the temple. Nothing prepares you for the temple. You're a youth and you're a child and you sing songs about the temple and you sing songs about how you want to go there someday and be married, but you don't know what happens inside. You don't know what commitments you will make, what obligations that will, how it will change your life. And it really seems that God, to me, now that I know God a little bit more in depth, it seems that God wouldn't expect you to make promises to things that you aren't even allowed to talk about, that things that you don't know about. You go to the temple and you attend and your family's there or your friends are there, the people that you care about from church, and you're not going to walk out with everyone there if you don't understand what's going on. You aren't mm-hmm. allowed to ask questions, and there's a strong pressure to be there and to go through with the ceremonies and the commitments. And they have what's called temple preparation or temple prep classes, and my husband even taught them at one point. And I remember sitting in the living room as he was teaching these people, preparing them for the temple. How can this prepare someone? They have no frame of reference. You're not supposed to speak specifically about what happens inside the temple.
Even after you've gone.
You are not supposed to speak in specifics. And so they try to give some scriptures and some guidance about how, you know, scriptures not from the Bible, but from, you know, the LDS teachings or president, you know, quotes from leaders and presidents, mm-hmm. past mm-hmm. presidents. And there's no understanding. There's no real preparation. And I think... like I said, knowing God a little better now, he doesn't expect that from us.
And I believe that you're right. One thing, I don't know if you've had the opportunity yet of doing Bible study on the temples. They do claim that they are they're the restored gospel.
And from what I've read so far, it's nothing.
It is nothing.
It's nothing like nothing. What happens in our temples today.
Absolutely, totally different.
From what I've been studying, it has nothing to do with the historical temple, which mm-hmm. there was only supposed to be one at any one time. And it was supposed to be in Jerusalem. And what happens in the temple is much more like what I've read Masonic ceremonies to be like. My grandfather was a Mason, and from what I knew and from what I've read today, temple ceremonies and practices are much more follow after a Masonic type teaching than anything in the Bible.
And I think that's true. Well, actually, the Bible temple did not do marriage ceremony, no ceilings, no multiple wives, if certainly not. Their temple was fulfilled in Jesus. Jesus fulfilled not only mm-hmm. the purpose of the temple, but the purpose of things that were going on inside the temple. And I think probably the most profound to me was the veil. Yes. The veil that they had in the Jerusalem temple was so thick, so intricate, so beautiful. It was 50 feet high. Two yoke of oxen pulling in different directions couldn't rip it.
That's not the veil.
God
in the LDS
ripped
temple.
It from top to bottom when Jesus died on the cross. And they've gone and put it back up.
That's almost sacrilegious.
It is. But mm-hmm. Hebrews tells us that the veil represented Christ's body.
And that is not the representation that is today. And one scripture that I found that was very shocking to me after having lived this way and attending the temple, it's in 1 Corinthians, and it's chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple mm-hmm. and that God's Spirit lives in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him, for God's temple is sacred, and you are that temple. It says nothing about there shall be temples dotting the world. Mm-hmm. It says nothing about, well, and even temples dotting the world is not a restoration
right.
of the original
right.
temple of Absolutely. Jerusalem.
You're right. And God's Spirit lives in us by virtue of receiving Jesus Christ as our only Lord and Savior. He's not the temple. The body is not the temple for every person on this planet, only for those who have given their lives
to
Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Also, the secrecy that goes on, and we don't want to dwell too much on that, but there's too many other things, but I would just like to say this. The word secret really should not be available to anybody in a religious context. There should be no secrets at all when it comes to religion.
From what I've learned, that is entirely the truth. That Jesus, and it says in the scriptures, and Jesus taught that there should be nothing secret.
And he spoke openly.
And he spoke openly mm-hmm. to everyone, and all of his words and beliefs and teachings were open for all.
For everybody.
And
yeah.
the temple is not that way.
Absolutely. Okay, what's mm-hmm. what's next on your list?
When you get baptized into the LDS Church, you take so much upon yourself. You don't even know what you don't know. You don't know what's expected, but you covenant to uphold the church and its leaders, and you feel bound, and you covenant to so many things. You are bound from day one. The teaching is that you are bound to follow and believe and act this certain way from day one. Mm-hmm. And like, once again, with the temple, I don't think God expects you to be responsible for things that you have no knowledge of.
That's true. And again, we go to the Bible, and we find where we're exhorted to say, let our yes be yes and our no be no. Mm-hmm. And we're not to go around making the oaths and the secret commitments and all of that, too. And we just need mm-hmm. to have an open life before God and before mm-hmm. our fellow man as well.
Right.
Okay. What else didn't you know?
Well, I didn't understand that the new and everlasting covenant that is talked about in the Doctrine and Covenants, section 132, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the promise to practice polygamy. Now, like you said in the introduction, I knew, because it's talked about, that one day the church might bring back polygamy, which I'm actually a little concerned about, because if legislation for non-traditional marriage goes through, mm-hmm. polygamy might actually become a part of that, might
Very
get
true.
Caught up in that mm-hmm. legal situation. And so the church is going to have to, and the people in it might have to face this bringing back of polygamy, mm-hmm. because it's still in their scriptures. It's Doctrine and Covenants, like I said, section 132. It's the promise to practice polygamy. Now, you know that you have to someday, and you know that it might come back, but that is the only place where it talks about it. And it's the only place where, you know, they might say, well, it means eternal marriage.
Well, let me ask you about that. When you were an active member of the mm-hmm. church, well, let me backtrack a little bit. I do get many phone calls and yeah. many emails from practicing Mormons mm-hmm. who tell me, they castigate me. They get on my case because I refer to Section 132 as a polygamy doctrine, and they say, no, it isn't. It's the sealing doctrine for the temple marriage, the celestial marriage. When you were an active member in the mm-hmm. church, did you see Section 132 as the polygamy doctrine, or only as the celestial marriage doctrine?
I saw that people tried to downplay how it pertain to polygamy. Polygamy did not, well, it started with Joseph Smith, which I found out later, but polygamy did not actually flourish until section 132 was written.
Right.
I mean, it was going on, but it was not really mainstream.
Have you read all the verses in section 132?
I have, but not since until after I left.
But you have read all. Mm-hmm. I don't think one woman I talked to, she hadn't even read all the verses.
Yes,
she just believed what they told her that it was celestial marriage.
It's embarrassing to say that at the time, for almost 20 years, I didn't.
Yeah.
You just go to Sunday school, and whatever they say it is. Mm-hmm. And you're so busy doing 1,000 other things, you're like, oh, okay, well, that's what that means. After I started studying church history, then I read I call it the polygamy doctrine, mm-hmm. because that is exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And
could you see polygamy in that clearly?
Oh,
could you clearly see
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. There's no other way you can interpret that than to mean that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And eternal marriage, even to the people who might say that, you know, eternal marriage has nothing to do with polygamy, we are told that we will have to practice polygamy in the hereafter. So that is the only place where it talks about, you know, the families are forever, that being eternally mm-hmm. sealed to your family. But that's where it ties into polygamy.
And I talked to a gentleman at one point. He was appalled to think that the families are forever thing may not be a true biblical doctrine. However, what I would have to say to that is anybody who receives the biblical plan of salvation and follows it exactly, if your whole family receives it, your whole family will be in heaven.
So there's not a problem.
But
the families are forever. Teaching is a double-edged sword, and people who end up, you know, who want to leave the church, or if they want to, or if they aren't living up to the standards, it causes huge tension and problems in the family because mm-hmm. that person is not going to be with us.
Yeah.
That, you know, so if it's a nice idea, but I think the gospel,
and it's not biblical.
The gospel in the Bible is much more protective towards, you know, those kinds of relationships.
Well,
all believers
yeah.
in Christ.
All believers. Mm-hmm.
Whether it's your cousin, the neighbor.
The scripture comes to mind in Acts, in the jailer, when mm-hmm. When the earthquake broke open the jail doors and everybody was set free. Mm-hmm. And the jailer came forward and said, "What must I do to be saved?" And Paul said, "Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved, you and your house." Meaning his family.
Right.
His family also, all they had to do was believe, mm-hmm. Believe from your heart, and you would be saved. And that was the simplest, his whole family.
It didn't say
would be forever.
You'd have to.
No ceilings in the temple.
Right.
None of the
nothing. You didn't have the whole list of many, many things that the LDS church, and I believe mm-hmm. that the polygamy, from what I've read about the polygamy groups, they require certain things too.
Oh yeah.
Of their people.
Oh yeah.
I think any religion that is Joseph Smith,
mm-hmm.
you know, derived from a Joseph Smith base, I think they have this to-do list
yes,
of things
do.
That are
mm-hmm.
required that have nothing to do with the Bible, that do not
yeah.
come from the Bible.
Their to-do list is more accurately patterned after Joseph Smith and Brigham Young than the
yes.
Mormon Church, the present-day Mormon Church
right.
is, at any rate.
Well, and that's kind of what my next point was that I didn't know Joseph Smith was a polygamist. My parents didn't know. My mother-in-law didn't know. My husband didn't know. And I just can't even believe that Joseph Smith, I don't know how he got away with telling young girls that, you know, an angel with a flaming sword is going to come and smite me if you don't marry me. I don't know if he'd get away with that today, but maybe he would.
Some
I don't
people
think
will
so.
Believe almost anything.
And,
it's amazing.
But I don't think God works like that.
He
that
doesn't.
Does not sound like something that would come from God. That sounds like man's intimidation and manipulation of women for his own purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a couple of instances in the Bible where an angel was sent forward to do something that God had needed to have done, but none of it was the same context. As Joseph Smith asking women to be his plural wife.
Promising them eternal salvation for them and their families
if they'll practice polygamy.
You know, if they practice. And mm-hmm. and it just seems a little self-serving and inappropriate and like nothing God would require.
Well, if this makes you feel any better, you didn't know that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy. I was born in a polygamy group and didn't know either, so I don't feel bad. It seems like the brunt of polygamy practicing fell on Brigham Young.
Well, yeah, and that's something that, you know, I was prepared with today, because the deception...
Do you want to hold that
it's
up to
huge.
The camera so they can
yeah.
see that?
Okay, this is Teachings of the Presidents of the Church series. It's Brigham Young. This is what we are taught in Sunday school. And these are the manuals that the husbands and wives, you know, the men and women are given for their classes, for their Relief Society class and their priesthood classes. This is what we study out of. Now, this is a timeline, a historical summary of the life of Brigham Young. And it mentions... We see that. Oh, there we go. It mentions that, you know, how Brigham was baptized into the church and how he was married. His wife died. Then thereafter, he took another wife. It mentions nothing about even the polygamy of Brigham Young. If you're a new convert to the LDS Church and you know nothing about the history, and you simply take your information from the books that they give you, you will not even learn that Brigham Young was a polygamist.
Which I just find shocking and appalling. 55
wives. And no other mention in this book about the life and teachings of Brigham Young. It says nothing.
It's like I mentioned in the beginning of the show. So much is either distorted or systematically hidden.
Well,
just purposely
because it's
hidden.
Not. It's not kind. It's not attractive. It's not polite. You know, it's dirty. They mm-hmm. like things to be clean, and they like things to sound good, and they mm-hmm. like them to be attractive. It's almost like it has to be the perfect media package. It can't just, you know, the gospel has to be cleaned up and presented a certain way, when I think that if it were of God, the truth would be good enough. The truth would stand on its own.
The gospel... the biblical gospel, when you said that, just came to my mind, is Jesus Christ dying on the cross for our sins. And that was not pretty.
No.
That was ugly. That was a very bloody, very painful, exacting mm-hmm. Thing that he did for us. And the reason it's not pretty is because he's paying for our ugliness,
right.
which is what we are in sin. Mm-hmm. And so we don't need to pretty anything up. Jesus
no.
is beautiful, but the sin that we are involved in, we don't have to worry about that.
Well, another thing that when we were talking about how, you know, it says that Brigham Young had two wives and not at the same time. We'd also, all of us have been taught that polygamy was instituted to help the pioneers cross the plains. And I know that's one of your myths that you've had in one of your other shows. And I was like, yes, I know that. That is everybody has been taught that. I told people that. My sister, I remember once talking with my sister, and she said, you know that that's not how that started. And I said, oh, but yes, they were, you know, they needed to help the women cross the plains. And I know because of your show and reading, because your show brings up topics that I can then go and research for myself.
Mm-hmm.
These days, I don't take anybody's word for
Good.
It.
Good for you.
I hear something and I research
go
it.
Go check it out.
Go check it out. And so I found that to be true. And it started with Joseph Smith. It had nothing mm-hmm. to do with them crossing the plains.
Right.
The population statistics didn't work out for that. It doesn't back it up.
And why was there so much polygamy in Nauvoo happened when they crossed the plains?
They didn't even need it there. But people don't talk about it happening in Nauvoo.
That's
they don't
right,
talk
they don't.
About it happening with Joseph Smith. They like to make the package a little prettier mm-hmm. and say it was necessary and here's when it happened. That's not the truth.
And also, if you take a look at the people who were polygamous, the women who were polygamous, was every polygamous woman a widow?
No. No, they had...
If that was the case, then they would only be widows, right?
Right. No, they even had other husbands.
Oh, yeah.
And and I didn't know that either.
I didn't either. I'm here to tell you. Okay, what's next on your list?
Well, we're taught in... There's a heavy martyrdom belief taught in the church. Joseph Smith was a martyr. His brother Hiram was a martyr. Hans Mielmasker people were martyrs. They, you know, there's this huge martyrdom and persecution undercurrent in the whole church. And we are a persecuted people.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
And you hear about how Joseph Smith, poor Joseph Smith, he was tarred and feathered. Okay, you don't want anyone to go through that. We're not saying, you know, that you want someone to suffer like that. But mm-hmm. it was always said that the gospel must be true because Joseph Smith suffered for it.
Yeah.
But then you find out he was making inappropriate advances towards the Johnson daughter at the Johnson farm where he was staying. And they wanted some retribution. They wanted him to quit being inappropriate with young girls.
And you know what? He eventually married her as a plural wife.
Was she one of them?
Yeah, she was one of his plural wives later.
It's hard to remember when they were 33 or 34.
But, you're right when you say that we can't advocate violence. As Christians, we're told that we can't.
No,
vengeance belongs to God, not to us.
But we can see maybe that wasn't as benign and as innocent. They didn't
exactly.
just take him out of his house in the night for no reason.
Well, they had a doctor with them with a scalpel.
And they were going to
do something, because they were sick and tired of his sexual advances to so many.
And they thought that that would solve the problem, but they ended up not doing it.
Yeah, he chickened out in the end of that.
And I didn't know any of that either. It's just poor Joseph Smith.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make people feel bad who might still believe in Joseph Smith, but those are the historical facts.
Well, they need to check the facts.
Those are the facts, and mm-hmm. I didn't know the facts.
Yeah.
I didn't know a lot about the true character of Joseph Smith. I really didn't. And from how the Book of Mormon was translated, I know that, and I wanted to find a copy, but I couldn't. You can get them on the internet. You can go to the LDS.org and pull up back issues of their magazine, Ensign.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's like July 1993, where they actually talk about the translating of the Book of Mormon. They mention the seer stone. Now, this was left over from Joseph Smith's treasure hunting days. You know, there was kind of a magical, mystical kind of practice back then with a lot of people. It's not just him. And he thought that he could find buried treasure with a seer stone. Well, I thought that the Book of Mormon was translated with, and there are paintings of it. You can go to the any of the church buildings and things and see mm-hmm. Joseph Smith, and they'll be on the cover of the magazines too. Joseph Smith translating the golden plates mm-hmm. with a sheet hanging between him and his scribe,
mm-hmm.
and he's either just looking at the plates or with his eyes, or, you know, they talk about him using something that he supposedly found with the plates, the Urim and Thummim.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually turns out he used his seer stone that he was using for treasure.
With his head in the hat.
It's mentioned with his head in the hat.
It wasn't writing it down.
It was not writing it down. It was putting a rock in a hat.
Yeah.
I did not know that. It is in the church magazine. I got the church magazine, but I guess I didn't read that article. That might have saved me a few, 15 years worth of whatever. But that, it means something to me. If you can't do a painting of the way it actually happened, what are you telling people? What are you teaching people through your art, through your lesson books, through your publications, if you don't show it as it actually happened?
Why are they afraid of the truth? Why are they afraid letting us know?
Because I think the truth, like I said, like you said in the introduction in my email, it will rock your world. And I had a friend who said that. She said, I can't hear what you're learning about. Because I was like, did you know this? And did you know Joseph Smith did that? And did you know polygamy started here? She said, I can't afford to have my world get rocked like that. So we can't talk about it. And I said, okay. She was surprised when I left the church, when she found out a year later I left the church, but she didn't want to hear it, had to put the blinders up because her family is too invested in her opinion.
Yeah. Well, I want to make a remark right here about the violence that was perpetrated against Joseph Smith. And again, we are not for violence. There's no way that we are. We can't condone it. And Jesus said in the Bible that blessed are those who are persecuted for my name's sake or for righteousness' sake.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the way I learned that the early Mormon violence was this persecution.
Yes.
But then when I became a Christian and started studying and I read the Beatitudes and where Jesus is doing all of these blesseds, I realized they were persecuted because of what they did with the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't persecuted for righteousness' sake. They weren't persecuted for the name of Jesus. They were persecuted because of polygamy. They were persecuted because they took Jesus and brought him down to the level of Satan by saying that they were brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the persecution that came forward.
It wasn't because of their righteousness.
For righteousness' sake. Not for the name of Jesus, but because of what? As a result of some of these
Some of the teachings and practices and, some of the things.
Absolutely.
Not to mention some of the things that happened. Like, they created an anti-banking society, and they defrauded people of money. And, you know, there were other things going on. It's a really complex social situation that was happening at those times, you know, with some of the things they were doing. Mm-hmm. And like you say, with the polygamy and the, and they, there were leaders who took money from people with their banking, mm-hmm. anti-banking society in Nauvoo. Mm-hmm. And people don't like that.
That's right.
People, they went to Missouri, a lot of the saints smugly went to Missouri and said, this is the land of our inheritance and we're going to get it. And the people who already lived there said, hey,
wait a minute,
we live here, wait a minute. And it caused tensions that didn't necessarily have to happen.
Right.
But it wasn't being persecuted for his sake.
For righteousness' sake, so for the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And we're talking about this, and it reminds me of the film that's being showed at the, I think it's the Legacy Theater at the Joseph Smith Memorial Building right now. Mm-hmm. I went last summer with my friend. It is not representative of the truth. It does not talk about how the tarring and the feathering happened. It did not talk about him fighting with Emma the way he did, mm-hmm. about polygamy and things. It did not talk, you know, it didn't mention that he had alcohol and two smuggled guns when he was martyred.
Mm-hmm.
To me, a martyr doesn't shoot people. A martyr doesn't say, oh, I guess I'll have to go, which is the way he said it. He actually tried to flee to Iowa first.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
right.
Yeah, he and mm-hmm. Hiram tried to flee to Iowa, and his wife wrote him a letter and said, please come back. Your people want you to, yeah. you know, stand up and take this. And they went, and it was not as a lamb to the slaughter. A lamb
right.
to the slaughter does not take smuggled pistols.
Right.
A lamb to the slaughter does not shoot fire
it was a gunpoint,
three times
yeah.
and people died
mm-hmm.
at his hand. That's, and it does not say that. In the final part of that film, it just, I think it says, oh Lord, my God, and mm-hmm. it shows him ascending into heaven, when in fact that was part of a Masonic phrase.
Yeah.
And he was a Mason, mm-hmm. As was Brigham Young and Hiram. They'd mm-hmm. been Masons for
yes,
years.
They were.
Joseph Smith hadn't been as long as they had, but many of the early leaders, if not all of them, were
mm-hmm.
Masons. And that is the distress call. You know, something like, oh Lord, my God, is there no help for the widow's son?
For the widow's son. Yeah.
And they just, instead of showing it the way it was and representing it for what it was, they made it seem,
twisted
made
it.
Turn it into an ascension, almost,
and
which is paralleling
Jesus,
that, like Christ.
Ascending.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is, it's putting him at the same level of Christ. And there is, that was one thing that caused me to question the LDS Church, because the Joseph Smith worship, it is real. It
mm-hmm.
does happen. Praise to the Man is
yeah.
one of the songs
yeah.
they
mm-hmm.
sing. His birthday is before Christmas, and there's more attention, many years there's more attention on Joseph Smith's anniversary of his
mm-hmm.
birth date
mm-hmm.
Before Christmas, and instead of Easter. This was a huge problem for me for the entire time I was a member of the LDS Church, was that it's mostly the celebration of the founding of the church,
yeah.
April 6th,
yeah.
something like, it's around
yeah.
Easter time.
Yeah.
There's more focus on that than there is on Jesus Christ.
On the,
that is
the
a problem
resurrection.
For me.
Yeah. And back to the film at the Joseph Smith, based on historical accounts, Emma was an apostate. She is an apostate
mm-hmm.
based on the historical account of what happened and Mormon doctrine.
Yes.
She refused
Brigham Young
to
did not smile very kindly on Emma because
right.
of these
things.
Right,
he didn't. She refused to accept polygamy.
Mm-hmm.
And when Joseph Smith died, she refused to go west. And, of course, that put anybody in on Brigham Young's black
yes.
list, you know, when
mm-hmm.
they refused to go west with him. But she, he has, I've got to read this on the show sometime, where he's blackballing her because she
yes.
tried to kill Joseph Smith twice with poison.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
and
historically
he damned
documented.
Her. He condemned her.
That
and
is an LDS
at that point.
I can't remember if it's it's in records which chronicle what was being said at the conferences and things
mm-hmm.
that Brigham Young actually brought that up
and
in public.
He, did. Mm-hmm.
he talked about it. It's in the historical
mm-hmm.
record.
Yeah.
It's in LDS, like, I don't know if it's in Journal of Discourses or History of the Church. It's in,
I've got the reference. I don't
yes.
have it with me, but
it's
I have it.
It's in something
so it's
LDS
there.
Somewhere. It's
it
not made up. It's
right.
not by someone with an axe to grind.
Right.
That is the truth. And there is huge revisionism
mm-hmm.
Regarding the relationship of Joseph Smith and Emma
mm-hmm.
in the like the last
oh,
five
yes.
or 10 years.
Absolutely.
It's completely turned around because there
and
used to be
some. And she
denied
that there was any polygamy involved at all after
well,
he was dead.
Yes.
And
yeah.
she started her own church.
Yes,
after
with her
they
son
moved.
At the helm.
And that's apostate.
Mm-hmm.
That's being apostate. apostate.
Yes.
And so she just isn't what they that, are what now they're, claiming
they're, to be. It's very different. I was in a Deseret Book the other day, and there was another new Joseph and Emma, the love story type, yeah. you know, video yeah. and
love letters or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, and books out. And things. And I was just, that is not what was chronicled historically.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
okay.
what happened.
Okay, well, let's see. You made a remark here on one of your notes, and I kind of wanted to bring that out, where you thought that polygamists were twisted goofballs.
Okay, well, maybe that wasn't as eloquently put as I could have put it, but that's the general message. That's what we're taught in the LDS Church. We have nothing to do with polygamists. Gordon B. Hinckley, the last prophet, said that before he died, that there is no such thing as a Mormon fundamentalist.
Right.
Well, when you look at the actual definition, it's somebody who practices and believes in the Mormon church the way it was mm-hmm. in its beginnings mm-hmm. and its roots, and they are more Mormon than the current than today's church is.
They are. And if you take the polygamy groups, and there's the FLDS group, there's the Kingston group, there's the AUB group, there's the Harmston group, the Peterson group, there's so many different groups yeah. of polygamists. And you would take them up side by side and put their doctrine and then put the early Mormon doctrine right next to it, you could see they would all being the same religion.
Yes. Yeah.
They're
and
the same thing. So if
and then you
the
put
Mormon
the current
the
Mormon
day,
church modern Mormon church, you put that next to it. It's not
it's
close.
Different. There's some morphing going on.
Yes.
But if they were, if the polygamists, the Mormon fundamentalists are twisted goofballs, then so was Brigham Young, so was Joseph Smith,
yes.
so was Wilford Woodruff, all of them, because they are living polygamy
exactly.
the way they were taught.
They were living it the way it was taught in early Mormonism, but Mormons today do not want to claim them. They do not want to look at the, you know, this isn't, maybe I shouldn't say this, but they want to think of it as like the, not even as closely related as the, you know, redheaded stepchild, you know, the phrase. Mm-hmm. They don't even want to claim, maybe it's a cousin. They don't even want to say that it came from Mormonism, that they just started up independently saying, oh, we're going to.
We gave it up and they didn't.
It seems like what we are taught is the fundamentalists are their own isolated people. They individually came to this conclusion that they wanted to live polygamy, so they're going to pretend that they're Mormons from way back. That's not what happened at all. The people, after the manifesto that supposedly ended polygamy, the people who said, well, we were told it was going to be everlasting in
right.
section 132.
Required for salvation.
It's required for salvation.
Mm-hmm.
It's everlasting. It's what does everlasting mean? If it's not to be practiced forever
and ever.
And they felt that the mainline Mormon church was bowing down to government pressures and that they were going to keep mm-hmm. keep the faith.
That's exactly
that they
right.
were going to do what they had covenanted and that they would keep polygamy alive the way that the prophets had taught them. And they are
faithful with it too. They believe
yes.
it. They don't necessarily like it, especially the women, but they'll still live it.
What's
so
to
that
like?
They can live their faith. True.
What's to like?
True.
Yeah, they're. If you look at historical Mormonism and the how it was run when between the time of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, they're more Mormon than I was.
Okay, you had a note here about Brigham Young and the way he treated his wives.
I had no idea because it's all happy, happy, joy, joy. Brigham Young, you know, supported his wives and loved his wives and took care of his wives, and he didn't. He made most of them live independently,
mm-hmm.
some far away in farms and ranches, some in the southern part of the state. Some of them were isolated. Many of them had to take up their own industry or find mm-hmm. some sort of employment.
Or they'd starve to death.
One of his wives wrote about how she was sickly and she nearly died and nobody came to check on her. He did not make sure she had medication. She had no funds. She had no way to take mm-hmm. care of herself when she mm-hmm. was ill. He was not what he is painted to be today.
Some of the stories I read of the early Mormon polygamists are just so heartbreaking. I just cry tears of past pain. But you know, Brigham Young in the 1856 General Conference, mm-hmm. he got up in this conference and he gave all of the polygamist wives an ultimatum.
And he said, we're sick and tired of hearing you complain. Now you either live your religion and shut up or get out. We're giving you 2 weeks to make up your mind what you're going to do. Now, if these romantics that like to think, oh, polygamy's not for today, but they lived it then and they lived
and because they wanted to and all be able to survive.
If it was that wonderful, why would Brigham Young have had to get up and say that? Stop your complaining. Stop it or get out.
No, it's being looked at with rose-colored glasses.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And I think that's why there doesn't seem to be a lot of prosecuting or crackdown. First of all, it's a huge problem, and it's hard to deal with.
Yeah.
But there are so many people in this area, in the Intermountain West, who have had ties in their past, in their family, and there's this kind of romanticism that's our history, and they don't want to help the people who would like to be helped out, and they don't prosecute when it's appropriate.
No, they don't. And there are, I've heard a lot of people, in what I do, I talk to a lot of people, and they, many of them say that it's a hard life. I wouldn't do this if I didn't need to do it for celestial glory.
If I didn't feel like it was necessary for salvation.
Right. And they don't have to. That's the whole problem.
I brought this, it's kind of another little thing.
That shows that...
Okay, this is a t-shirt from my daughter's summer camp, the young women's camp. And Doris was just saying, I wouldn't work this hard if it weren't necessary for my salvation. Apparently in LDS and... because that's what I'm familiar with, and what Doris is familiar with is FLDS.
They're working towards heaven.
They're working towards heaven. Now, the subtopic is careers, but the whole message of that week was, we have to work for our salvation. We have to work to go to heaven. And I believe that that's how the polygamists
They do. Absolutely.
Believe.
They don't know grace. They don't know biblical grace, or they would never make a t-shirt.
They would never.
Like that.
No.
Never
and
would.
And you have to train them up to believe that from little, or else they... if they actually read the Bible. I was talking to a friend. Biblical illiteracy is the root of all of these problems. If you knew that it said in the Bible that there's no giving and taking, there's no marriage in heaven, what is that reference? I have it.
Matthew 19. Is it 19?
I think so. And there's no marriage in heaven. If I knew even that much when I was 17 years old, then I would have said, hey.
Something wouldn't have clicked, right?
It wouldn't have the whole
temple ceremony,
temple
the
ceremony,
ceremony,
everything
the marriages,
that you're taught.
The polygamy,
it would not.
None of it would click.
No. Is it in Luke?
Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it says, the baptism's for the dead, it says, and in the resurrection from the dead will neither, marry nor be given in marriage. If I would have known even that much when the missionaries came to my door and all the cute girls from my ward who were being friendly and helpful and bringing me brownies and wanting me to come to the activities, I needed that. I needed something. I was looking for Jesus. I was going to different churches. They were very friendly and they were very persuasive. But if I would have known at least one grain of truth from the Bible, I would have noticed that it was a false gospel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and when you know the truth, it's easy to detect the lie.
It is. Yeah. It's glaring now. Yeah,
it is. Okay, your next point that you didn't know is?
that God had sex with Mary.
Oh, my.
From what I had interpreted from the Bible, that the Holy Spirit overshadowed or overcame. But they actually talk of a physical... union.
Well, Brigham Young and some of the others actually preached that from the pulpit.
Yeah, but I don't remember it being in, like, say, the Doctrine and Covenants or the Book of Mormon, but I do believe it's in the teachings of Brigham Young and in church history.
In fact, there's one comment he made that he said, you have thought, it might have been Orson Pratt that said this, I'm not sure which one.
He said some real gems.
We are taught, we read in the Bible that the Holy Spirit overshadowed Mary and she became pregnant as a virgin. He says that is not the way it happened. So he comes right out
and says the Bible,
and says the Bible is lying about this. Now, when the modern day Mormon church does not teach this, and to be honest with you, I wasn't taught this being raised in the polygamy group.
I wasn't taught this. That's why I was surprised when I read it.
I don't know if they're teaching it now. Maybe
maybe to the secret meetings or something. I don't know. But when I've been watching the way that they will make statements, mm-hmm. and when they say that they believe that Jesus Christ is the literal Son of God, they're saying exactly that.
Yes.
The only begotten Son. They're saying the only way he could have been begotten, and even Bruce McConkie, as recent as his, said it was a physical sexual union mm-hmm. between Mary and God.
And that's again blasphemy.
Oh, it's awful.
If you read the Bible,
yeah.
I don't know why Orson Pratt would think that he had better answers than the Bible does, but like you say, I have not been taught that recently. I discovered that reading church history. That was not what we were being taught.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do read between the lines and it says the literal offspring of God,
mm-hmm.
that's what they're saying.
He was conceived by the Father and the Mother in heaven. Well, there's no mother in heaven.
I've not read anything in the Bible that teaches
Mm-mm.
that.
Not at all. Okay, but again, this is a doctrine that they don't talk about, and many, if there are any Mormons watching the show tonight, they probably are appalled that we would say such a thing. I've never heard of such a thing.
They're lying about what we're teaching. It's in church history.
But it's there.
It's not taught in Sunday school. It's not what I was taught, but it's in church history.
It
is a belief that early leaders held and taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Absolutely.
Not meaning to offend, but that's if you read in the history, that's where it's at.
It's there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one that you want to talk about is one of those where it's easy for me to get a soapbox on this one
mm-hmm.
because it's so...
This has been my big beef lately because in February, my whole entire family and my mother-in-law too, we sent in our letters to... what are they called? Letters of resignation, letters of, you know, to terminate our membership with mm-hmm. the LDS Church. And finally, we got ours back in, I think, middle of May, got our confirmation back. My daughter framed hers, put it on her bedroom wall. I said, well, okay, that might offend some of your friends who might still come if their parents let them.
Yeah.
So she turned it around and put another picture on the other side.
Okay.
But the shunning is huge.
Yeah.
When you say that you're leaving this, I felt... And one of my friends actually came out and said this, it's like you're telling me that you're gay.
Mm.
She said, it's that much of a shock to our systems, it's that much of a shock to our belief system that you would turn away from the church. And I think one reason why that they take it so hard is because it's like it's saying, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And they don't like to hear that.
Yeah.
Another reason is because they think that you've lost your salvation,
mm-hmm.
that you're going to be in outer darkness for denying you know, the Holy mm-hmm. Ghost or whatever, but that's not the way it is.
One thing I don't understand, if Mormons claim to be Christian, they claim that their religion is a Christian faith, mm-hmm. and if you leave their church and join a Christian church, what's the beef?
I don't understand.
If it's Christian, then of course they're not, but
personally,
they claim to be.
I think I want to worship and follow Jesus Christ. I don't want to worship and follow a church.
It's not the church. The church has nothing to do with
no.
it. Absolutely nothing.
And I don't see that there's a problem, but they do. And another reason why that there's a problem is because when they take their temple recommend interviews and they're sitting in front of their bishop or their stake president, they will be asked, and I know this because I've had my temple recommend for many years and my husband was in the bishopric and conducted the interviews, that it says that, you know, are you associating with individuals or groups that believe contrary to the teachings of the church? Now, I don't think that's a direct quote, but that's as close as
mm-hmm.
I could remember.
Okay.
But in this respect, if they are still being friendly with you, if they are still associating with your family, they are not worthy to hold a temple recommend because they are associating with apostates and people who believe contrary to their teachings.
And would Jesus do that? I mean,
Jesus
really, would
treat
Jesus
people like
treat
that?
People that way? And you know what they do in the polygamy groups is even worse, which is what the early Mormons did.
Yeah.
And that they will intimidate you, they'll threaten you, they will cut off your telephone lines, they will mm-hmm. do anything that they can to harass you if you're thinking of leaving or if you're trying to help somebody leave. They will do everything they can to make life miserable for mm-hmm. you. Is that Christ-like?
I don't believe Jesus would do that.
That's the shunning that goes
on.
It's terrible, absolutely
shunning.
Awful. And then those who will mm-hmm. A spouse finds out the truth.
Oh.
So the bishop will recommend a divorce.
And that happens. I know
a
that.
Lot. I've
I
heard
know that
dozens
for a fact
it,
because
yes.
my husband was in the bishopric and he was in on a lot of those talks in the, you know, the bishop counseling people. He would talk to his counselors about it. And he would mention that. I have said repeatedly, I am so blessed that my husband had the intellectual honesty, or I don't know what kind of fortitude, maybe God touched his heart. He was not one of those kinds of men to just say, I am putting whatever I think is right above my family. He said, I will look into it. I will study it with you. If
Good for him.
We find that this is what
Good for
that
him.
What we've been taught is contrary to the Bible, we will leave as a family. This is not going to break us up.
Good for him.
I was talking with a friend the other day at a barbecue, and she said, I know two LDS ladies whose marriages were broken up.
Okay, very quickly, we only have a couple of minutes left. Can you truthfully say that the Mormon Church believes in free agency and that they practice it?
No. They can't, not when they shun people and persecute them when they choose a different belief system.
Yeah.
That's not true. And they have in their Articles of Faith, number 11, it talks about how, you know, we will worship according to the dictates of our own conscience and allow others the same. When they will no longer talk to you, when they have a problem with you being a Christian in another capacity, they are not honoring that obligation. They're not believing in that.
Okay. Well, I believe that we should not only know what we believe, and that's one of the reasons for this program, but not only know what we believe, but to know why we believe it.
Yes.
Why do you believe what you believe? Just because you've been told, or have you studied it out for yourself? Becky, we've got to get ready to close the program now.
Thank you, Doris.
So much for coming. It's too bad we didn't have 3 or 4 hours to talk.
I could talk forever about these things.
And I'd like to thank our viewers for watching the show tonight. My closing comments are going to be wrapped around the free agency. In this culture with the Mormon fundamentalists and the Mormon Church, they really don't. They talk a lot about free agency, but they really don't practice it. There are so many coercive methods that are used by these groups to keep their sheep, so to speak, in their respective pens and to keep them in spiritual darkness. And they use intimidation techniques that would help those who try to help others. Too many times they are rejected or excommunicated for somebody who comes out and tells the truth and reveals truth to them, so they just get sacked. And now if God were really the leaders of these particular groups, there would never be any force or threats or rejection or shame or any of these other shunning tactics used to try and keep people from leaving or try to get people to come back. In Matthew chapter 19, verse 22, a rich man came to Jesus and asked him what he needed to do in order to inherit salvation. And Jesus knew that this man had money as his idol, and so he told him, sell everything you've got and give to the poor, and then come and follow me. He didn't run after this man when he turned and walked away. He didn't threaten him and shun him and beg him to come back. He let him walk away, and he left the results to God. Isn't that what we should do? Shouldn't we follow Jesus' example here and just let them walk away and then leave the results to God and be nice to them? I'm sure Jesus is nice to those who left and walked away. And to those of you who do walk away, I exhort you to come and follow Jesus. Jesus says to come and follow me, and he says, anybody who comes to me, I will in no wise ever cast out. So that's good security, I'd say. I want to thank all of you for watching the show tonight. We will see you next week live.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.